Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Can you hear me?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You're going to get new interviews just like this one sent your way every single week. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give this series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. Of course, we've had some great guests drop by lately. In fact, I was just talking with Colin Hay of Men at Work, Bruce Coburn, Elvira herself, Cassandra Peterson was just here, Olivia Allen Lynn, she's starring in Wayward on Netflix, Jeff Tweedy of Wilco. I talked with Michael Chiklis, Rob Cordery, Mary Stuart Masterson. They're all starring in The Senior, the movie The Senior. Hannah Stocking, Madison Pettis, and Yvonne Orji. You can see them in The Wrong Paris on Netflix. Legendary actor Willem Dafoe was here with Corey Hawkins to talk about The Man in My Basement. We talked with Soft Cell, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, Sabrina Impacciatore from The Paper, Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today catching up with Ian Astbury of The Cult. Of course, the man's been the voice behind everything from She Sells Sanctuary to Fire Woman to Rain, which makes him either one of the last true rock mystics or maybe just the guy who won't stop yelling about horses and flames. Either way, The Cult's been around since the early 80s. They've been riding that line between goth and hard rock. Ian's also dabbled outside of the band. Do you remember when he was fronting the Resurrected Doors, the Doors of the 21st Century? Now we get to talk about him. What's a tour? He's touring both The Cult and their short-lived precursor, Death Cults, on the new Paradise Now tour. Ian's going to dig into the Orwellian echoes of 1983 when the Death Cult were out there, why revisiting Death Cult feels like a zero-point reset, and how it recharges his artistic DNA. He's also going to reflect on being an outlier in the mainstream, the contradictions of fame, his frustrations with the loss of danger in modern rock, and along the way touch on performing with Tool, his martial arts discipline, memories of Live Aid, and the enduring mission of the Gathering the Tribes. All that and more as we talk about touring the Cult and Death Cults on the Paradise Now Tour. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Astbury of the Cult.
How you doing?
Good to be talking to you again. I think this is our third round with each other. It's been a few years, though.
It's been a long time.
You been okay?
Oh, man. That's subjective.
That is subjective for all of us. It's a loaded question anytime anybody asks. I understand that. Yeah.
I was okay 5 minutes ago, and in 2 minutes, who knows? Full transparency, we're 28 days out from a tour. So we're being as productive as possible.
Sure.
I'll try and use some positive language. We got a shitload going on. Cult's in a renaissance right now.
Yeah. No, so, I know.
All of a sudden, we're everywhere.
There's several shows. I mean, I hear you all pop up in shows a lot, but especially in the stuff that you've been popping up in lately, like that must be nice to get that kind of attention when you don't even have to try.
Well, Severance, Euphoria, even Happy Gilmore 2, a few of the shows, doing Rick's podcast. I don't think they just throw a dartboard. There's obviously something, a frequency that they're picking up on that's always been there with us. We've always been the outlier, the contradiction. I've been called everything under the sun, from libtard to somebody said my last Death Cult performance, they just said absolute weapon.
Huh. Wow.
As a performer. And I read that and I was like, whoa, that's pretty hot. That's nobody's ever said anything like that. Absolute weapon. I was like, wow, that's...
You can put that on a business card. That'll work.
You can put that on anything. Yeah. It would work. You can put that on your...
It's your new t-shirt, right? The new tour t-shirt?
No, I wouldn't.
I guess that could be dangerous, honestly.
Not that much of a narcissist, you know? No.
Yeah.
Just a dude, Carl, love music like you. Grew up in music. Love music. It's all about music.
Even when it's someone else saying it, you know, it takes the weight off at least. It's not you. You're not giving yourself a nickname by any means. Someone's bestowed this upon you. That's a compliment.
It is a compliment, and you can enjoy that, savor it for my nanosecond, and high five yourself and get about your whatever you're doing that day.
Well, I love hearing it pop up. I heard it in Happy, I heard it in Severance, and it's always... being such a big fan of the music that you have made over the years, it's always a high point in any kind of show. But jumping back to what you said a minute ago, 28 days out. I mean, here you are, back to the States with two bands at once. I mean, the Cult and Death Cults at once.
Yes,
it's not the first time that you've put those clothes back on for the Death Cult, but why now? Why again? What is it about this band that keeps pulling you back to it? Especially because it was such a short moment in time, right? We're talking like more or less like 82, 83, 81?
Death Cult was actually 83.
Yeah, just 1 year. Okay.
Probably more like 8 months.
And here you are again.
I feel, if we want to get all Orwellian and dystopian, I feel that 1984 was a zero point. It was the end of the 20th century. It was evident that we were moving into this. I mean, Ridley Scott dropped his commercial for the Olympics. Remember that commercial?
Yeah, I do. That was, I mean, iconic with the army. I don't know if you call that an army, but yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of almost an extension of the wall, which was only in 1979, 80-ish. Roger Waters had very eloquently was it the director, Alan Parker? They put the war movie together. That was such a seminal moment in like looking at where we are, where we've evolved to post-industrial revolution, post the cotton journey. I mean, here we are now with MTV. Here we are with, technologies creeping into our, just nascently Computers. I don't know about you. When I was a kid, I went to school. We had to do the noughts and zeros on a card. Where you know, if you wanted to code, that was your coding. You'd get a card that had all noughts and zeros and ones. Sorry, noughts and ones, and then you had to kind of fill out, black them out, so the computer would read it a certain way. I mean, it's the acceleration of the human evolution, I guess. But I feel that that period, especially when McLaren, pistols, what was happening in New York, it was almost like the Aquarian Age with the 60s was one tributary. And then there was another one with technology coming in. We were going to the moon. Now we're talking about going to Mars. It transcends your cognitive ability to process this stuff. So instinctively, I always work intuitively. And then afterwards ask why, how. I'm going, gut feeling, just instinct.
I mean, it's so interesting to hear you, yeah, to say that because I, you know, as I was going back and listening to those two EPs that you all did that year, of course, became the album, and thinking about the world at the time, I mean, Cold War era.
We were in the Cold War. We were going to Berlin at that time. One of the first concerts Death Cult did, and we did, Billy and I did, was in Berlin.
Oh, wow. So it's
And we
one of
had
the
to go to
first ones
Marion
to.
Dorm. We had to go through the gate. We had to go through, you had to stay on a single freeway to go from West Germany into Berlin. And then you were met by East German soldiers and then Russian soldiers. And then we actually recorded at Hansa Studio. We recorded, that was later, we did Resurrection Joe at Hansa Studio, right next to the wall. But the first concert was at the Loft at Nollendorfplatz, which was really Monika Doering, very, very famous Berlin entrepreneur, you know, advocate of culture. And we played with her, for her, in her club. It was quite seminal. But seeing that, I mean, CND symbol, the peace symbol, was very prominent. There was a lot of people on the street.
And we'll be right back right after this.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Astbury. A lot of bands will use an anniversary, of course, to do something. You were able to say, man, it sure does look a lot like it did when we released that one record.
Yeah,
Less
there's
like.
certain, yeah, there's certain, it's part of our, it's our DNA. It's almost like I had a rupture my Achilles in two places jumping off a base cabinet about 2 years ago. You know, I'm not in chairlift. Oh, sorry, I'm not in a turnstile, chairlift, turnstile.
I gotcha.
You got me.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to get PRP, and PRP extracts blood, spins it in centrifuge, puts it back in, accelerates healing. So in some ways, Death Cult is our PRP. It's taking our original DNA, putting it back into us, and it's given us such a sense of revitalization, going back to zero point, which is also a, if you have any kind of meditate process, if you practiced. I train martial arts. I've studied since I was a kid, esoteric, certainly Eastern esoteria. You come back to the breath. You come back to the zero point. That's the moment you're in. So, in fact, the idea of nostalgia is an illusion. Your body does what it does over the course of a life. But if you can keep coming back to that central moment, that central initial connection, which I believe, I mean, Southern Death Cult was very much that as well. But Death Cult was almost an extension of Southern Death Cult. And then feeling a very familiar social, political, cultural landscape as well. It just felt instinctively appropriate. The Death Cult appeared, just started to come up more and more in the frontal lobe. And I started to look at it and go like, this is okay. This is scary because in some ways you're going to put this out there and we have no idea how it's going to be received.
Which it has been very well, very, very well. I mean, this is the way people are, fans especially, but talking about it, the opportunity. I mean, it's like you have a career. You have an, if you're lucky as an artist, you have a career. So you're going to be singing a lot of the same songs over and over. And maybe you don't have to tap into them because they're always there, right?
Yeah.
Something like this, like if I went back and tried to sing the songs back when I did play, you know, for a long, long time ago, when I was a teenager, I'd probably be looking at it going, ah, man, this is rough. And I'm not saying that because I don't think Death Cult is rough, but I'm saying as the person who did it, like, what is it like tapping back into that? What is it like having that conversation in these songs with the version of you from, you know, 40 years ago?
That kid was a coyote. I mean, that kid was a street kid. I was a street kid. I lived on the street. I didn't have anything. And I was like, no, it's like sleeping in a bus station or a building site or, you know, get rolled on the street, be in a squat, follow crass, et cetera. You know, smoked the blunt with Paul Simon in a Clash gig in 1979. First time. I didn't even know what it was. Jazz cigarette.
Jazz cigarette, yeah.
A jazz cigarette. It's Paul Simon, for God's sakes, who was a god and still is a god. Hey, kids.
How'd that moment go for you?
I was just so full of adrenaline and excitement. We, Cosmo Vinyl, who had worked with the Clash, basically let the back doors open. We had to see the Clash in Glasgow and let us all in. Like the kids were hanging around just to say, wow, hi. And then, you know, fast forward, what, 3 years later, we're opening for them in some Death Cult, stealing the beer. And so there's that part of it. The show was phenomenal. I mean, my God. I remember Mick Jones throwing his white Les Paul up in the air. He had a spiral chord, and that guitar went right up. And I thought he was going to catch. Everybody thought he was going to catch it. The very last minute, turned his back and walked away, and it just shattered. And oh fuck, who does that anymore? Nobody.
Nobody does that anymore.
What, Kyle? Please explain to me what the fuck is going on. It's like artists are terrified, terrified. People in the industry are terrified. Everyone, it's like everyone's frozen.
The danger, right? Like, I will interrupt you to say, and this is an easy target. I understand it's an easy target, but the MTV still has their VMAs, and the best rock artist got was Coldplay. It's Coldplay as the best rock artist. Now let Coldplay exist and
We're
do whatever they want to do
DHL.
For whoever. There's so many. But there is the thing. I mean, like, you know, Death Cult was great.
They're lovely,
moment.
By the way. We can't bang on Coldplay. Coldplay have never come across and said, we're trying to be something that we're not.
No. I said, let them exist as they do.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that.
Absolutely. They're excellent at what they do. I've seen them live. They're excellent at what they do. They're incredibly entertaining. They transcend you for like 2 or 3 hours. Great. But I'm not talking about Coldplay. And I'm not talking about like eco-friendly, you know, being able to put on an eco-friendly concert, which we're all aspiring to do. Of course we are. Of course we want it to be. Of course we care about our ecosystem. Of course we care about the environment.
I'm agreeing with you about the danger gone. It's not Coldplay's fault they won Best Rock Artist. I'm not saying that. It's that that's how this system is now set up. That you have a great post-punk thing going on with some bands in Ireland and Scotland and stuff like that. And you know,
we talk about Kneecap.
Any of those. Yeah.
A bit of a fracas. Naughty Boys. I mean, we do
Fontaines,
have
Idols to the same. You know?
Yeah. Fontaines are dope. Okay. Okay. I might have to retract my comment.
Perhaps, but it's not on the level. Yeah.
It's what's being popularized perhaps by the broader media construct. I mean, I love Ethel Kane, period. Staggering. Dust Bowl kills me. crushes me.
What, Patriarchy? They're opening, right?
Patriarchy, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Live. Raw. I feel it's perhaps where the... I mean, I came up with mentors like Bill Graham. Bill Graham really cared about the community. He really cared about the artists. He was intimately involved with those artists. He was really intimately involved with mentoring artists and communities. That's why we did Gathering of the Tribes. He cared about that. He cared about the community. He saw that MTV was eroding our emotional intelligence, shall we say. And that we were all complicit, maybe subconsciously, in the format, you know? I feel the formatting of MTV kind of forced us down a certain funnel. And then when we all woke up, we went, oh no, you know, which we did. I mean, the cult did anyway, with Gathering of the Tribes in 1990, which obviously evolved into other things. And there is a counter narrative. You're right. There is a counter narrative, but I retain the right. The management reserves the right to change its opinion at any goddamn time it pleases.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm the contradiction, a contradiction.
Yeah, but the way you all were able to be an outsider in the mainstream, to jump back and forth, like even when the 90s hit, like when I hear The Witch, which is one of my favorite songs, right? When I hear The Witch.
Whoa.
And...
Hallelujah, thank you for noticing.
Absolutely. weird movie, great soundtrack.
This one came from Pink Floyd. Yeah, massive Roger Waters fan. Saw them when I was 13, so...
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. For you guys to have figured out, you know, Gathering of the Tribes and what it stood for.
Yeah.
And the way you, you know, held yourself out there, artistically speaking, to have been an outsider and to have pulled all those people in. I mean, you're using that terminology still, you know, I know in the new press release about this tour, you know, we are gathering the tribes once again, these outsiders, you know.
Yeah, outlier. I like outlier. It's...
Outlier. Sure.
Yeah, it's more more romantic.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But I think we're saying the same thing here. I feel
yeah,
like.
We are. We're saying the same thing.
Come yeah.
On. Yeah.
But like, what a thing to do. This sounds like a dumb way to ask this question, but was it hard to be essentially, you know, rock stars, pop stars, arena stars at the time, but to still be this outlier?
Yeah, I struggled with it. Once MTV kind of grabbed the band, and we were on heavy rotation. And then we had label behind us, like, you know, Reprise in the United States. And Seymour Stein had signed us. And we were at that zenith point of a career in terms of commercial success and eyes on. Something didn't feel right. Because my friends, my associates, my friends were not really in that space. They were more like evolving, like, you know, people like Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone. They were emerging. And I was more likely to be around them than I was to be around at some bougie MTV, you know, velvet rope party. I didn't go to those places. I didn't feel comfortable in those environments. I didn't feel comfortable being objectified, you know, because the way I looked, everyone assumed that was a dum-dum, you know. Oh, who? Hold my beer, you know. You know, in Britain, I couldn't get a break. I mean, one journalist, the enemy, said my mother must have been sniffing glue when she gave birth to me, 2 TPs short of a reservation. So not only did she slander my mother, who died on my 17th birthday of cancer, she also made a racist slur towards Native Americans. Different time. These were put downs, and I wasn't having it. And because I wasn't having it, I spoke my mind to go like, maybe we're just going to turn the volume down on you a little bit and push you over here. And I took a beating in the media. I took a beating and everybody assumes, well, many folks assume that because you're not present in media, that you're no longer active, vital, relevant, whatever. It was a personal choice. My father was also dying of cancer at that moment. He died at 58. So there was a lot going on behind the scenes. And I was also dealing with my own coming of age. I was coming of age in a band. I started when I was 19. So coming from, as many of us do, tumultuous childhoods, and then immediately getting thrown into the cauldron of you're on the front cover of the NME, and you don't even have a record out. No music was out on the cover of the NME, Sudden Death Cult. shot by Anton Corbin in 82. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I was at Live Aid in 85, sitting between Bob Geldof and Billy Connolly. Go look at it. It's funny. I just looked at it the other day. Somebody said, have you seen it? I'm like, what? Live Aid. I'm like, yeah, I was there. And said, no, go look at it. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm drunk. Not me. Am I hammered? I'm smoking a cigarette. A Live Aid. Why Queen are on stage. What?
That's a memory, though.
It was a lot to process. You don't process it in the moment. You process it. It's like a car accident or something. The shock. I think shock dragged us through the adrenals. But the cult had a 12-year run before it imploded. We took a hiatus.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ian Astbury.
Still making great music, even as you were imploding. And then going into Holy Barbarians, which is a fucking great record in itself. Like, I don't think you made a bad record, you know?
Oh, dear. I laugh at Holy Barbarians. Jesus.
Have you heard that one? I mean, anytime recently. Yeah,
some of the lyrics in it, I think that was my kind of Britpop record. You know, that's when football was football. Uh-huh. It was very, I mean, I grew up on Merseyside in Glasgow, so, and Canada. So, again, you know, the contradiction, because in the UK, they think, why do you speak with an American accent? I'm like, I don't. And then when I'm over here, they go like, are you from Britain? I'm like, kind of. I don't know, that's why I live in LA. It's a lot, man. It's keeping it grounded is, I go to the dojo, that's where I keep it grounded. Train, try and improve, try and be decent, try and be of service, try not to be a dick. Sometimes I'm a dick.
I mean, it's a good thing to have. I talked to, because Maynard from Tool, you know, he's, I don't know if you're you, I don't know that you all do the same types, martial arts, I guess.
Oh no, he trains, and he's a grappler. He's definitely got ground game. I don't.
But I hear about that same the way you're talking about it in the same way.
Yeah. Maynard's gorgeous. He is a sweetheart. He is a good man. He's got a good heart, and he's devoted to his craft. He's devoted to music. He's a performer. He's a writer. He cares. Mm-hmm. And we recently did shows with Tool, Mexico City, Aztec Stadium was crazy. It was unbelievable, incredible. And that was recently. That was only in March.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that you all shared the bill.
Well, he got us on the bill.
Yeah.
And Dino, our managers, those two conspired to get us on the bill. And Adam was into it as well. So, and Danny. They're pretty staggering. I've seen two or three times. It's like, oh.
It's something else.
It is something else. It is part of the counter narrative. Long may they endure each other's company. It's like, people say, what's it like being in a band? You guys are all like, you little live in the same house or something, like the Beatles and, you know, Hard Day's Night, whatever. It's like, no, it's not like that.
I know we only got a few minutes. I couldn't pass up, because looking back now, as we're able to do with what you're doing here with this tour, with the Cult and the Death Cult, and just realizing, even as we talk about this, how many different bands, not only have you been by name, but have you been in the cult? You've been a lot of different bands in the cult. And I mean that in your sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we talked about the record 2 years ago. You know, that doesn't sound like
it's
love.
It's like the wall behind you. We've got on the, is that Aphex Twin handprints?
The handprints? No.
What's the hand? Oh, I can't see that.
Oh, we got some Depeche Mode here. REM, of course, Prince and Bowie, Mountain Goats.
That's a good picture, Michael Stipe.
Yeah.
Of course, you've got to have David on the wall.
David, Gahan,
and Bowie.
Uh-huh.
Excellent. Sorry.
That's all right. No, it's, but I mean, it, because I guess that's a part of it too. That's what I mean, is like, you all have done so many different sounds through your career and pull it off. And I'm not trying to, you know, blow smoke your way or anything. Like the compliments are genuine, is what I mean. Like how do you... You said this at the beginning. Everything's from your gut, right?
Yeah.
Like, who's the cult going to be next?
Oh, it's already started. ask AI, man.
Ask AI. When are you going to do a new record? I'm not trying to do
Noel
that
Gallagher.
Question.
Ask Noel Gallagher. Maybe we should start a supergroup. I don't know. I mean, that could be interesting. I'm obsessed with Berlin. I'm obsessed with the electronic dark wave. I'm obsessed with the dark futurism, electronic the dark wave femme, the dark wave brutalism. I mean, it's evident that we are not going to move into a knitted pullovers and acoustic guitars. Hello, here's a song about sheep farming. I don't think we're going there. I think it's going to be full B2 bombers. And I mean, how can you not, if you have a heart, pick up on what's going on globally? And the idea of being on the spectrum, wherever you are on the spectrum, we're all connected. So hopefully we can work it out. That's John Lennon talking right there. Yeah. Baggism, man. It's
Have
a
you noticed
bagging.
the
Oh.
color matte gray is dominant in vehicles right now? And I think
Yes.
that is so of our time. When you talk about
Yeah.
the Cold War and I think about colors, like
Yeah.
that's the color.
Excellent observation. And that's really using emotional intelligence. Honestly, that's pretty much how I do it. You just pick them on frequencies and go like, this is really interesting. I'm seeing this here, here, and here. And they're not directly related, but they are. But you're right. I mean, I'm seeing more and more of that kind of satin or flat gray.
Very industrial, you know.
Very industrial. It feels almost like we're into this. You can imagine. And the Orwell movie just came out as well, which I haven't seen, but I really want to see it. I actually love gray. It's so many shades of gray. We're about to use gray again.
I
Yeah.
mean, you're on the frequency and talking about dark wave and stuff like that. Like there's
I'd do it all, man. Honestly, I'd love to do things like fucking play with the Grateful Dead, play with Lana Del Rey, one-off. Just do one-offs with everybody you really admire. Like everybody could just go, you know what? Let's share toys. I think that'll be an amazing festival, actually, to just get a load of people together who love music and say, what are we going to do? It's like, well, what have you got? And what have you got? And then throw it together and do rehearsals and then present it. Not everyone trying to gouge the last penny out of poor promoters who just got their heads in their hands right now.
gather the tribes, man.
Where there is a will, there is a way, and we shall find a way. Curated by Rick Rubin, probably, because Rick knows everybody,
He
apparently.
does know everybody. I bet he does, yeah.
I could always
And
call him up and ask. Well, he didn't have a phone, so I
Bill
managed to get
Murray
hold of him.
style. You just have to
What's
show
that?
up. Bill Murray style. You just have to show up.
Do you know, Bill Murray might be interesting as a cultural.
He's on tour. He's got his little blues outfit that he tours with right now.
He does?
Yeah. In fact, I'm in Louisville. They're going to be playing right next door here.
Oh, you're in Louisville, Kentucky.
A few weeks, I
Nice.
think they're going to be over here.
Amazing.
Gather those tribes,
Amazing.
man. I'm telling you, it's time. It sounds like it.
Tribes, yeah, different version. I mean, when I was in, with all respect to Lollapalooza, when I was in South America, I saw the billboards for Lollapalooza, and it was a big Jack Daniel's bottle.
It's different.
And it was also a sunscreen commercial. So that wasn't the original intention of gathering the tribes. It was about community and diversity and inclusion and tolerance and a festival of music, unity, consciousness, and communication. I came up with that slug line as a 26-year-old, 27-year-old, just earnestly. And people go, you pretentious. You're so pretentious. I'm like, I'm ba basically a child. I don't even know how to be pretentious
Yeah.
yet. I will wait till I get to my 40s for that. Now I've well gone past that line, but whatever.
Just get to go back. You get to go back to childlike wonder at
Well,
some
that's it. You
point.
go back to 0 point, you go back to death cult, you remind yourself of where you came from, and it really does put the fire in your belly. But the death cult shows that we have done have been, oh my God, savage. Somebody said, can you describe it in a sentence or a couple of words? I went, yeah, beatific savagery. It's connected. It's
Right.
connected. And I've seen so much. You know, I've been in Belfast. I've been in Tibet. I've been in Berlin when the walls, but I mean, we've seen so much. Been at light, traveled, you know, experienced apartheid in South Africa. But so many moments that we haven't really spoken about, because I'm not here to kind of, you know, the good old days. It's about what's happening right in this moment. So I think that's why the Paradise Now is the title of the tour. And then I remember Ray Manzarek when I got asked to join. Ray sat down. I sat down with Danny Shugman and Ray Manzarek, And they were being offered Harley Davidson's 100th anniversary. And I said to Ray, I said, is this the time that you want to go out and play your music? He says, well, if not now, then when? And I went, bloody good point. So that was it. Things come up. You impulsively act upon your gut. And if not now, then when? And that's what we're talking about with Paradise Now. Paradise Now as a mantra for all. And it is available at your local cult, death cult, patriarchy concert. And we'll be squeezing out a few surprises along the road as well. You know, we're not Oasis, and we're not playing the Rose Bowl and all that, but I remember Noel Gallagher, Noel standing on the side of the stage when we played in stadium in River Plate Stadium, and he's working for Inspiral Carpets. That was funny. Here we all aren't.
Well, I tell you, I didn't go to the Oasis shows, but I will be. And by the way, I would have if I got the ticket, happily. But I will definitely be at one of these shows to see the Cult and the Death Cult. I don't think I'm going to miss this one. So,
Yeah, they're going to be, it's going to be pretty kinetic because our style is to rehearse at the very last moment, keep it scary. Like, do I know that bit? Have I forgotten that? But the energy of that, when you're over rehearsed, it's pretty boring. But when you're kind of under rehearsed, it demands that you have to tap into your emotional intelligence again and respond to the moment and stay off TMZ.
it's a good parting phrase right there for a good news for anybody.
I think TMZ is fine, but I actually got on TMZ in one of our last tours. So. But with a good behavioral, good
They were
citizen,
actually saying you were doing something good.
I stopped somebody getting in. There was a choke. Somebody was getting a choke hold in front of me, and the security were picking the noses and not paying attention to somebody who was getting really hurt. I just got involved, and I despise violence anywhere, especially at shows. It's supposed to be a safe place. So. Cult shows are safe spaces, you know. Everyone's welcome.
I'd love to hear it. I'll be
Yeah.
there. I cannot wait for it.
Thank you,
And
brother.
I always love talking to you so much, really. Thank you so much for taking the time again today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your lovely show.
And my thanks to Ian, the Paradise Now tour kicking off. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get all the interviews that I put out every single week, just like this one, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starts 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, alt, indie, bonus interviews, lots of music news. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Simon and Garfunkel, Cream, Jalen Nagonda, Slow Dive, The Police, Lou Reed, Material Issue, The DBs, Jensen McRae, John Batiste, Cat Power, The Last Dinner Party, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Soundgarden, and my interviews with Les Claypool of Primus, Paul Banks of Interpol, and comedian Joe Gatto. That's what you get when you tune in weeknight starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
What's your t-shirt, by the way? Ooh, Wonder Horse. I'm gonna go listen.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.